Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. You have tuned, there we go, into episode 611 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. This week, we're taking a deep dive into a topic in the world of amateur radio, Linux, and open source. But before we get into that, we should let you know who we are. For our silent key, Russ, K5TUX, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD. And yes, welcome back, everyone. And tonight's deep dive is on a topic that we have mentioned in the past. But before we get to that, let's get a roundup of the things that we've done since the last podcast. So, Cheryl, why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Here, and this week, I'm for food-related things, I'm still trying to get back into the habit of cooking, which is hard when it's just one person. Last night, I fixed truffle honey chicken with roasted asparagus, which was always something I got at Cheesecake Factory. And then earlier today, I made some homemade chicken noodle soup, which I think this is my best batch yet. And I've been making it for over 30 years using my grandmother's recipe. But today, I tweaked it. And I made some chicken salad that had celery, julienned carrots, walnuts, and red grapes with a raspberry vinaigrette and mayo dressing. And then tonight for dinner, in the guise of Easter, once I get done with the podcast, I'm having a brown sugar orange glazed ham, mashed potatoes, and green beans with bacon and garlic. My computer adventures this week have consisted of paying bills and getting info gathered up for tonight's podcast. And regarding ham radio, my big exploit on that one is I've been making my list of things I need to pack for Hamvention. Not like Bill got out of here with 90% of the stuff anyway, but... I've not been in Russ's office at all this week, so I haven't even looked at the radios to have them intimidate me. Yeah, we'll try again next week. So,
well, since that antenna is like indestructible now, right?
Well, yeah, since the branch bounced off of it, so, you know.
It's well secured.
Next week, we'll lose it next time, so.
Yeah, it'll make up for the fact next time, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we had an interesting Easter. We had our grandkids here at the house yesterday, and so we decided, we'll just do Easter, you know, on Saturday instead of Sunday, you know, for the Easter dinner and stuff like that. So I did ham, and I did an orange glaze as well. I actually just took the glaze mixture, and instead of adding water, I added orange juice.
Nice.
I'd get the orange flavor in there and kind of prepped it. So I you know, roasted it in the oven for a couple hours, like you're supposed to get it nice and warm. And then threw on the glaze, let it sit uncovered for probably like 15, maybe 20 minutes, maybe a little less, just to get it nice and, glazed and happy and shiny looking and everything else like that. And then pulled it out, covered it up, let it sit for like 20 minutes while I prepared, you know, mashed potatoes and couscous. Kids like couscous. And what else did I make? I think I did broccoli as our vegetable, just to change things up a little bit. And the ham turned out great. It was very good, and it was very moist all the way through. And unbeknownst to me, we had both my boys brought their girlfriends home
for
Easter dinner. So we went from having just like, you know, small family gathering and, you know, the two grandkids to nine of us eating. So the ham was pretty much annihilated. There was some leftovers. Won't be too many ham sandwiches left. I think my wife just hit that up for dinner tonight. I'll probably have some after the podcast. But yeah, it did turn out really well. And this time I made sure to let it sit. And it was, very moist all the way through, which was a first in a long time. So it was nice.
That's kind of important with ham. So
Yeah, yep. I've definitely learned my lesson with that, and the proof was in the pudding, as they say. Nice. So it turned out excellent. Everybody had a good time. I think the only thing that didn't turn out great were we made crescent rolls, and I didn't pull them off the sheet pan fast enough, so they sort of got little crispy on the bottom because the pan was still pretty hot when it came out, and I'm like, oh, I should take that out, but I was busy doing the other stuff, so that didn't come out as fast as didn't come off as fast as I would like, but it was fine. The kids still ate them, so they were all gone. As for the computer stuff, I really haven't done much besides doing some distro hopping on the computer I use for tonight's test work for the episode this evening. So we'll talk about that as we get into that particular topic. I will be, I think, because I'm talking about my radio stuff here, there's nothing new to report. You know, I did move the antenna to the backyard. I still have some RF coming in on some of the bands when I operate at, you know, full power, you know, put the full gallon 100 watts into it. Occasionally when it tunes up, it does spike, and there's a little bit of RF getting into the shack, which is pissing off the USB device that connects the rig. So that's a problem. So my goal, I think, is to, I think I'm going to rearrange my my shack a little bit and consolidate the computers to one table and move it further away from where I have the antennas coming in. Because right now I have like all the antenna wires and the power and those computers all sitting on one wall. And I think everything's just essentially too close for each other. So I think I'll move all that and kind of relay stuff out, put the radio by itself and far away from the other stuff just to kind of keep that isolated. And I probably do need to finally put in a ground wire outside to isolate the tuner and stuff like that. And I haven't done that in the past just because I've been lazy. But I think it's probably worthwhile to do to have a ground that I can bring in and right out the window, or not the window, but through the wall of the house where I have the stub outs going for the antennas and kind of isolating all that stuff down to ground right outside the door here or right outside the wall. So that'll probably be a project maybe this week. I don't know. I still have my taxes to do, so that'll probably consume most of this week. So maybe by the next podcast, we'll see. If not, it'll be the following one. Thankfully, the next podcast is a weekender, so it won't be too much stress to get that together. So it's a nice way to end that particular weekend. So yeah, just cruising and doing lots of other stuff here. I was at the theater today doing some painting, trying to get ready for a kids show that's opening up on Friday. So yeah, a lot of time being spent doing other stuff and avoiding doing my taxes, basically. So
well, that sounds like a good reason. So
yeah. Hopefully, we'll see. Anyway, so that gets us down to our topic, and Cheryl, why don't you go ahead and introduce us to our topic and tell us a little bit about this this product.
Okay, so tonight actually Bill is going to be covering Intercept, which is a unified web interface for software-defined radio tools. You can monitor pagers, track aircraft, scan Wi-Fi networks, and more, all from your browser. And the features of it, including pager decoding, and it allows you to monitor emergency services, legacy paging systems, 433 megahertz sensors, including weather stations, TPMS, smart home devices, etc. Sub gigahertz analyzer. Let's say aircraft tracking, which you can also use the interactive maps, see aircraft photos, emergency squawk detection, range visualization. ACARS, which is aircraft data link messages, VHF data link, listening post, which is a frequency scanner with real-time audio monitoring, CW and Morse decoder, web SDR, spy stations, for diplomatic HF network databases, APRS, satellite tracking, radio sonde, I believe that's how that's pronounced, ISS SSTV, so you can see the the ISS stuff, WeFax, which is a weather fax decoder, GPS tracking, weather satellites, vessel tracking, smart utility meter monitoring for electric, gas, you know, water meter, remote agents, Meshtastic, TSCM, so you can check up on all the threat detections and stuff. System health, so you can check out a telemetry dashboard with process monitoring and metrics and stuff. Offline mode, so you can run without internet using bundled assets. So HF SSTV, space weather, Wi-Fi scanning, Wi-Fi locate, Bluetooth scanning, BT locate, and there is a note about features like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth scanning will require separate Wi-Fi and Bluetooth adapter to be connected. In terms of supported SDR hardware, Intercept supports RTL SDRs as well as any SDR supported by SOAPI SDR.
Yeah, so it has lots of things that you can get into. And mind you, if you have a distribution like, say, Dragon OS or something like that, that has a lot of utilities already in it, you kind of have a lot of this already within the context of that that operating system and distribution. However, this sort of, you know, brings it all to the web browser and kind of makes it more accessible, I think, at some point, unifying all of these tools into one kind of UI or one kind of location that you can all go to check it out. So I spent some time with this, and I started with their GitHub page, which we have linked in the show notes, as well as their website. And I started to follow the quick start guide, and I thought, well, you know, I have this system, and it's Fedora. I just said, oh, just for giggles, I'll try their quick start on Fedora to see if it does anything. And of course it didn't. It immediately said, not supported, it's Fedora. go somewhere else. So the quick start guide is primarily for Debian, Ubuntu, and Mac OS. When you're using Mac OS, it uses Brew to bring in a lot of the utilities and stuff like that you'll need to support this. While I was resetting up my system, because the Fedora one was just a burner box anyway, I looked at the start script and I noticed that it had some special stuff just for Dragon OS. So my particular quick start was ran on a Dragon OS machine just to kind of see how that would work. But for testing, I did try the quick start on Ubuntu Mint. I have that running my ham station right now. And it hung up. It got hung up and stuck doing the what was it? It was done the dump 1090. It kind of flaked out on that and never got past that. So I'm not sure exactly what that was. I wasn't going to do an S trace and try to figure out what was going on with the reason why dump 1090 was not actually installing. So I kind of gave up. I gave up on that Ubuntu box and said, well, I'm going to put it on Dragon OS, so let me do it on Dragon OS. So funny enough, when you run the quick start guide on Dragon OS, it runs lickety-split quick because most of the stuff is already there. It adds just a few minor things that it's not there. And it installed itself in just a mere few minutes. There also is a Docker option for doing an install. And the Docker option could be used on boxes like Fedora or boxes where things don't work quite as well as you would like. And as always, recommend Podman for running your Docker containers. It runs very well. And with Fedora, at least, you can always run the cockpit for your Debian container, not for Debian containers, for your for your Podman containers, your Docker containers and stuff like that. So you can get a web UI to manage and check the status of your Docker containers. And if you don't want to use the Docker PS and stuff like that to do all your command line lookups against your Docker containers that are running. So once you have everything installed and running, they have a start script that you can run, and it does sort of prompt you for your environment variables, which would be your location and stuff like that. So if you don't happen to have a GPS installed in the box, which I don't have a GPS installed in that box, you can go ahead and just set in your lat lon. So that'll help you out when you're using applications that require any kind of location tracking. And once I got that up, it runs and it binds itself to the computer at, you know, the root 0.0.0.0 and port 5050. So what that means is now the web server is accessible to everything that the box is accessible to. Some people might not like that. I don't mind it because it's just going to be here in the house. Nothing else can see that box except for me. And allowed me to use my web browser on a different page, so or a different computer, so I could go in and kind of see what's going on with it. Now, my particular installation, I started off with one RTL SDR version 4 dongle, which I had sitting around just so I can do some of the initial testing. And I got through testing most of the stuff that was here. The only thing I could say in general, like just general terms, is that I noticed if you had it running, like the SDR connected and running in one screen, if you didn't stop it and you went to something else, it would try to start it again and then would complain about the SDR being used somewhere else. So I found that to be somewhat clunky. Going back and forth, I had to like stop it and then, you know, stop all processes and then try to bring it back up again. A couple times I just restarted it just to make it happy from the computer itself, the host. And once I kind of got used to that sort of experience with it, I kind of felt a little bit more confident and trying out the various things. But when you do launch the web GUI, you get presented with a really cool looking screen. I like the way it's themed. It does have a swooping line that goes from top to bottom on the screen as it's, probably like a, give you the indication that it's refreshing or something like that. It's kind of cool. It gives you kind of like the feel of you're actually doing something. So across the top, when you get in there, it gives you several drop downs to access some of the other items that were listed here in the tools. It has a signals drop down. The signals drop down gives you access to the pager tracking, the 433 megahertz tracking, the meters, the sub gigahertz, the waterfall, Morse code, and the OOK decoder. The next drop down is tracking. So this would be more GPS based stuff. So this is where you'll find your ADS-B, your aircraft tracking, your vessels, your APRS, your GPS, and your radio sonde. The next drop down is space stuff. So that's where you'll find your satellite tracking, your ISS slow scan TV, your weather satellite, your WeFax, funny enough, your HF slow scan TV, which I'm not sure that's space, but whatever. Space weather and a meteor scatter, kind of cool. And the next drop down is a wireless drop down. And this will be when you're tracking kind of all your connected stuff that's off your Wi-Fi, your Bluetooth, has the Bluetooth locate, the WF locate, and the Meshtastic. Now, mind you, with the Meshtastic, you do need a Meshtastic device connected to this to make this work. So you would have to have that connected via whatever means. If you're connecting via Bluetooth and you decide to do Bluetooth scanning on your only Bluetooth scanner, you'll probably lose that device in that process. So be mindful of that. If you can plug it in via USB, that's probably the best way to do it. It has an Intel dropdown. This is where you'll find the spy stations, the web SDR, and the TCSM or TSCM. And then you have a system dropdown, which gets you to that dashboard for your health screen. And that shows the system processes and memory usage and everything else related to the computer it's connected to. As well, on the top, you have like a main dashboard button. You have a UTC time indicator. You have additional buttons for doing animations if you want the animations to go away. Like, that's probably the swoopy line that's going through the screen. You have the ability to toggle back and forth between dark and light modes. There's a button here for network monitoring, so you can do a multi-agent view on your network. You have a ability to manage remote agents, which I did not go into that, so I don't know exactly what that does. You have a settings gear button here. You also have a ability to mute the voice alerts. So like right now I have the aircraft radar one running, and every time it detects an aircraft, it sends a little beep into my headset or into the speakers. So you get kind of like an indicator, an audio indicator of new stuff going on there. Other buttons here, you have a cheat sheet button, kind of exposes all the commands and stuff like that. So if you don't understand what you're doing or what the individual thing does, it gives you the cheat sheet for all of that. It also has a nice help button here, so you can go into the documentation for stuff. And then also has a button here to expose the keyboard shortcuts, so you can use the keyboard to do stuff. Let me go into some of the things that I have used and I thought were kind of cool. Here in Montana, we don't have any vessels because there's no water around me. We're sort of in the high desert, except for the Yellowstone River. And, that doesn't really take on commercial traffic. But we do have air traffic. So I have been in kind of addicted to watching the ADS-B traffic kind of go through. And it's been kind of fun watching what's flying over and stuff like that, especially stuff at high altitudes that are just passing over, and kind of seeing the aircraft types and stuff like that. It gives you all the information of the aircraft as they fly over, and then you can, you know, search them up to see not only which airline it is or which transport company or what have you. Or it could be even like a private aircraft that has ADS-B locators on it. Like I was watching the Rocky Mountain College, which is a local college here that has an aeronautical program, flying their small aircraft around Billings. So that was kind of fun watching them go around. I did try the Web SDR, and I really wasn't horribly, well, they have the Web SDR, and that connects to the Kiwi SDR network, so that doesn't use your RTL SDR device. But they have like a monitor mode where you can actually monitor the traffic, and that's in one of these options here. What do they call it here? And there's signals, the waterfall. So the waterfall. But I found the waterfall to be slightly clunky, and yeah, I wasn't super happy with it. If you want to do a waterfall thing, I think you'd probably be unhappy as well with it. I'd probably, stick to using, SDR plus or something like that, that you can have, real interactive session with your SDR device. I did try the slow scan TV stuff. So when I did that, I originally had just my VHF, UHF antenna plugged into one of the SDRs. And sorry, I'll get to the questions here in a minute. I did have my UHF, VHF antenna plugged into one of the SDRs. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do HF slow scan, I might as well plug in another RTL SDR. Actually, I plugged in the, I have a HF Discovery Plus from AirSpy that I decided to try to plug in and get working. And I saw that it detected it fine, but when I tried to actually activate it, it wanted me to install a program called ReadSB, which I believe is like the kind of like the interface to read it the way it wants to read it. And I've read across this before, but I didn't have any luck actually getting that to install. So I had it make fine, and I tried putting it in the path because the make install didn't work as it was documented to work. So I basically said, well, I have another RTL SDR version 4. I'll just plug that one in and use that as the secondary device plugged into the HF antenna out in the backyard. And that worked fine. And it was okay. I really didn't get any decodes on it. There wasn't much activity going on the day I was doing the actual testing for the slow scan TV. So I didn't get any decodes. I was kind of going back and forth between the radio, listening to the real radio, and going back and forth. And it's like, oh, as soon as I turned on the radio, I finally heard a slow scan signal. So I must have just missed the opportunity of actually decoding that. And I didn't have an ISS pass that would be excellent until I think later today. So I didn't get to test the ISS slow scan TV, and I can't remember if they're on slow scan right now anyway. The satellite tracking I did go check out, and that was pretty cool because when I was playing around with the ISS tracking, I was looking for that as well. And I like the interface. Do I like it more than I like the way GPredict works? I don't know. It's definitely a good UI and stuff. But for like most of the purposes that I would use it for, I would rather just use GPredict with radio control and just have it, you know, adjust the frequencies of my RTL SDR for tuning into the uplink and downlink and stuff like that. Primarily just a downlink, obviously, since it doesn't transmit. Looked great. I did try the utility meter scanning. I didn't hear any of my meters going. I figured it should be close enough where I would hear my local meters. I didn't hear them. I'm not sure what their heartbeats are for when they actually do their transmission. I have a gas meter as well, but I don't think they actually have RF on that. I think they come out and read that manually. We did try, when my son was here, we tried the Wi-Fi scanning, which does disconnect the box because I only have one Wi-Fi adapter on that box. And that was interesting, not very useful information for me beyond just seeing all the Wi-Fi networks close by to the house here. We did try the Bluetooth locate, so looking for basically air tags and stuff like that. And I did see both my daughter's and my wife's AirPods in the house. So those do come up and show as like a locatable device, as well as everything else that's heart beating and Bluetooth. So if you're interested in that stuff, it is kind of cool to see that in a unified display that shows you kind of like what the device is and where, if it's close by or not close by, what the signal is. What was the other one? The one with the weather stations. So the 433 megahertz, that's what it was. Yeah, the 433 megahertz sensors. And I heard a lot, surprisingly, a lot of devices out there giving out temperatures and everything else, including one close by that has a low battery status. So if you're within the range of my neighborhood, you probably need to fix your battery on your weather station. It looks like it's in critical condition. Overall, it was a pretty good experience. Like I say, the clunkiness of the UI sort of, is a little bit of a turnoff going back and forth between stuff that I would expect to work, like using just the regular waterfall, SDR type interface. That seemed very slow and clunky. And I did have some luck listening to audio through it, including listening to it from a different computer. If you have two SDRs in there, you can use one for like sort of the decode and the other one for decoding the audio and pushing the audio out to the browser. And that worked pretty good. Overall, I think it's an interesting product or an interesting project. I don't know if it's a product per se. It's open source. You can download it all and check it all out. But it's definitely done pretty well. Obviously, a lot of AI involved in developing this out and kind of putting it together, which may account for some of the performance issues, as it's just looking for, the expectations of it working, not necessarily being highly performant. But that may change with age as this continues to grow and build and there's feedback given on the particular project. And yeah, I kind of liked it. I'm probably going to run it for a little while and kind of see if I get bored with it. And I think the best bet, if you happen to have a Dragon OS box, that's probably the way to go. It had the least amount of barriers to kind of get everything running. And yeah, if you're running something else, buyer beware. You got to do a little bit of work with it. If you're going to use Docker on your box. I definitely wanted to have it completely isolated. So I wanted to have it on a completely system that's not touching anything else, just to kind of see how it behaves first. And then I can go through and look through all the code and ensure that it's safely done. It does require sudo access for some stuff, because obviously if you're doing any kind of Wi-Fi sniffing and Bluetooth sniffing, you need to kind of mess around with the devices in promiscuous mode and be able to see those devices and control them from everywhere else. So yeah, it does require elevated privileges, which some people might have an issue with, But without further analysis of the code, I wasn't going to really put it on anything that has any personal login information or any other bits of information that I would be concerned of it, you know, heart beating back to somewhere. I didn't see any suspicious traffic on Wireshark going in and out of the box, but you never know these days. You should always take a look at the software profile and kind of look at that software inventory of the project and do your research, because there's so much malware getting pushed out to, you know, NPM and everywhere else. And obviously this is running a lot of JavaScript. So NPM packages are definitely an area of contention for watching for any kind of malware getting into the actual application. And if you're giving it elevated privileges on your system, you could run into an issue if there was some type of compromised piece of code sitting in there, because it would have full access to everything on the system. Other than that, Cheryl found a couple of links to some YouTube videos going over the actual project, as well as a review from Ham Radio Therapy and an RTL SDR article on it as well. So you can find all of those links in the show notes. So I'm going to look here in the chat room to see if there was any questions. Let's see. Steve says, does all the data come from your own devices, or can it connect to other SDRs on the web? It can connect to other SDRs on the web for just the, specifically the web SDR that goes out to the Kiwi SDR network. But in general, you're going to be using your own devices for everything else. I don't see an option. Let me just look at my screen here. I don't see an option to change the device to something I don't have. So I only see the dropdowns for the devices that are plugged into the system when I click any of the dropdowns. So I think for most of the stuff, you're going to be using your own devices. So that should answer that particular issue. And yeah, it's pretty cool looking. I know Cheryl didn't get a chance to look at it because it's slightly outside of the bounds of where she's at in her ham radio path right now. But Cheryl, did you have any questions that perhaps came up in your popping all these notes in and watching the YouTube videos that you found us and stuff like that?
No, actually, it seemed pretty cut and dried and what it actually offered to me. I considered dragging out one of the laptops and trying to do something with it, and pretty well decided, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. So, because it seemed like it was a little too overwhelming. So,
yeah, on the right system, the quick start worked quickly. Like, it literally was just follow the three commands. Get clone the repo, you go into it, and you basically do setup.sh, and then you do start.sh, and you're off to the races. And that's basically all I had to do on the Dragon OS system. So, I mean, it is possible that it can be pretty simple. And, you know, looking at the script for setting it up on the Mac, that would probably be very similar as well, using Homebrew for popping in all those packages, because that's been pretty solid every time I've used Homebrew on a Mac. So, and unless we have any other topics on it, I think that's probably as deep as I can go into the project myself. As always, we ask if you've tried this or you're going to try it, and you get some feedback to us, we'll definitely put that on the show notes here, and we'll talk about it in a future episode. So please take some time to do that and give us some feedback on this and whether you tried it or not, because it's pretty cool. If you haven't really messed with some of the tools, it might get you like an easier barrier to entry to accessing them. I know some of the videos from SEMA Executor on Dragon OS can be very complicated. I know I watch every one and I'm like, how do I do that again? So this is definitely like sort of easy mode kind of playing with stuff, but there are a few drawbacks, definitely with performance and stuff like that, that might catch you up and might kind of turn you off in actually using this. But other than that, let's move on and let's talk about announcements and feedback.
Alrighty then. Well, as usual, we've got several going here, so I'll handle the announcements. I'll let you handle the feedback. So for our announcements, we need help supporting the show. You can do that via Patreon, PayPal, merch. Just a few bucks a month helps us out immensely when it comes to covering the cost of giving you the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. So just remember that. Woo-hoo!
And just remember the Patreons, like if you're on Patreon, you do get the show without the intro and outro music. So if you're a fan of that and you just want just the guts of the show, I post that the very first thing. So it's the first thing that's available out there on the famous interwebs. So take that as an option if you're supporting us via PayPal or basically, if you're just supporting us via PayPal, Patreon is an alternative to that. And you can start a Patreon membership for just $2 a month. So it's a pretty low barrier entry, and it gets you that show feed unencumbered by the intro music, which I have shortened down. if you haven't noticed, it's definitely shorter. Thank you very much.
Okay, so for our next thing, we desperately need topics. For weekender episodes, anything goes, but we definitely need weekender and deep dive episode ideas. And you can, reach out to us on Facebook or whatever, or email us at info@lhspodcast.info. We will be at Hamvention. So we'll see you May 15th through the 17th in booth 2206. So that's in the big buildings, not the little one that we used to be in. So this will be our second year there. We have a repeater for sale. So please spread the word to anyone you think might be interested. If you're not, Russ bought a repeater and it was working until a few months ago when it was taken offline because of his death. So if anyone is interested in everything available, because it's going to be a package deal only, reach out to us at info@lhspodcast, and we'll get you details and pictures. Bill took several pictures of it. So pickup will be in Southwest Missouri, or I can pass it off to Bill, and he can take care of it in the Billings, Montana area. Or if you're going to be at Hamvention, I will happily drag it there or wherever. Bill does travel a little more thoroughly than I do, so if you're somewhere along his travel route, he might meet you up with it somewhere. So anyway, reach out if you're interested. Bill can tell you exactly what's there. I don't know other than pictures. So please, ask if you need details. So, and we're going to have a memorial service for Russ, and I'm going to mention this every time. It's going to be at our home in Mount Vernon, Missouri on November 1st, 2026. Everyone is welcome. If you'd like to join us and you're not a friend or fan of mine on Facebook, send an email to info@lhspodcast.info, and we'll make sure to get you more info. So, and that's all I have to say.
Cool. And we did get a couple of feedbacks on our Omarchi video. So this is the video I did with the decodium and running into issues with the dialogue box popping up and being weird and couldn't get rid of it and stuff like that. If you haven't seen that video, check it out. It's real short. It's just kind of funny. But anyway, we had a couple of comments. One came from T. Grossner, and they say, Omarchi seems like a hammer in search of a nail. I'm sure it fits a niche, but not really my niche, or it's not my niche. Yes, I concur. It's definitely a very specific kind of user that would want to be messing with this. So consider that as an alternative operating system, and also an alternative GUI. That's a different desktop environment, and I would see like most programmers would probably like it a lot. If you do other stuff, like even ham radio stuff, somewhat it works fine. There are some oddities that you'd have to get used to, and I kind of cover some of those in the video. Another comment from Paul Griffith, and he says, I have no experience with Omarchi. I might consider adding it to my bucket of something to try sometime. And that's from KE5WMA. So thanks a lot for the comment, Paul. Great. Yeah, check it out. It's definitely interesting, and if you haven't used a fully keyboard-driven desktop environment, it's definitely one to try. It uses Hyperland, and yes, you can install Hyperland on pretty much every distribution. So if you just want to try it out on your own, spin it up, take a look at it, and you can see if you like it or not. The nice part about Omarchi, it's very opinionated. It has very specific utilities for how to interact with updating your you know, Wi-Fi connections and everything else has something semi-custom or is using a specific command line looking tool. So it fits really well with the theme of the entire desktop. So yeah, check out the Omarchi video. And I guess you can do the subscribers and supporters.
All righty then. Well, for this time, for our paid Patreons, we have William Collins and John Stengel, which are both monthly. For PayPal, we have Dylan Engel, which is monthly, and Michael Burdack. For free Patreons, we have Eddie, KR4JVI. And on Facebook, I know three of these are definitely new. The rest of these, I'm not sure if we've included you in past podcasts because we are currently down the Etherpads from when Russ was still alive. So if we've already mentioned you, sorry, but if we haven't, yay, you're here. So anyway, on Facebook, we have Jim McIrvin, Stephen Millward, and Colby Wallace. Those are new people this last week. Then for our older people, we have Psycho Joe Johnston, Jeremy Reese, F5GIT, Lamar, John Walsh, Sean Bolton, Chris Arneson, Dennis W. Nichols, Nate Dwyer, Abraham Shaw, Todd Calloway, Patrick LaPointe, Mark Longson, and Jonathan Hoag, or Haig, or whatever. So, and I think I remember reading some of those back in December, but I'm not positive. So, we didn't have anybody join us on Instagram, nobody on X or Twitter. On Mastodon, we had metal.smurf. And for our live show, we have Steve, KJ5T.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Steve. Yeah. We'll eventually get everybody back in here and we'll get the crew back together again. So yeah. We are going to be recording every Sunday at this time, 8 p.m. Central. So come join us live. We record live here in Discord. And if you're not on our Discord server, the link can be found on our website, lhspodcast.info. And Cheryl, why don't you go ahead and close us out? Because I don't see any new comments or any other notes that we have to chat about.
No. So that brings us down to the end of our show. So thanks for listening. We'll catch you in 1 week with our Weekender episode. This has been episode 611 of Linux in the Ham Shack. For Russ, K5TUX, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1909-547-7469. That's 1909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.